Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest tonight, or today, depending on when you're listening, is Chris Ulrich. Chris, thank you for joining me.
Scott, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Now, Chris, you and I have known each other for a long time on the internet. And in person. We've met in person. Although there is some controversy whether it was in Austin or San Francisco. I think it was in San Francisco. But so tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, basically, these days I'm a father, and I do a podcast also called The Flickcast with a partner of mine. We talk about a lot of pop culture stuff, and we have our website as well, and that's fun. But mostly I'm being a dad these days, which is its own set of frightening challenges.
And I suppose probably marginally more important than pop culture. Marginally.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, keeping another human being alive is certainly certainly interesting. But yeah, I would say it is more important. You're right. You're absolutely right. I should say it is. You're right.
I think you probably should say it.
I should.
I know that you love pop culture.
I do.
But I honestly have no idea if you consider yourself as a fan of Star Trek, where you would find yourself on the continuum of Star Trek fandom. So, are you a fan of Star Trek?
I'm a huge fan of Star Trek. Actually, Star Trek was one of my first television examples of science fiction that I watched. In fact, we used to move around a lot when I was a kid. And Star Trek was the one sort of constant. I'd turn on the TV and it would be on, so I knew everything was going to be okay because I had my show. And so it's been a part of my life since almost the beginning. So I was around, not when it first started, but I caught it in like the first round of syndication. And that was just, I mean, I'm talking about original series now. And it was just, you know, it's an amazing show. And I've always been a fan. I love the series. I love the movies, all of that, of course. So it's a great show.
Now, I always ask people what their favorite Star Trek series is. So I'm gonna ask you, your favorite Star Trek series. Go.
It's a toss-up. I got to say, that's a cop-out answer, I know. But I loved the original series because, you know, it's the first one I was ever exposed to. And I was always a huge fan of the dynamic between Kirk and Spock and McCoy. And then Next Generation, I was sort of skeptical when it first came out because I'd had such a fondness for the original. And yet, so it took me a little while to warm up to Next Generation, but then I would say that's probably my favorite of all the shows because, I mean, Captain Picard is awesome, so it's a toss-up, but I think I have to give the edge to Next Generation.
Oh, interesting. So who's your favorite? So is Captain Picard your favorite character on Next Generation, or would you have a different?
It's funny. People always talk about who's your favorite captain. I think he's my favorite captain because he was the philosopher and the thinker, but he also could do action. When it was required, but I don't know if he's my favorite character. I've always had a fondness for Riker too. I don't know why. Riker is sort of that bad boy who kind of, I feel like he almost like fell into the job somehow. It's like, oh, I'll be the first officer. Sure, why not? You know. So I think Riker probably is my favorite character.
No, bearded or not bearded Riker.
Bearded, that's, for sure.
That's the right answer.
Definitely.
Except no substitutes, people.
only bearded Riker.
Only right. Bearded Riker. I like Riker a lot as well. I'm not sure if he is my favorite Next Generation character. I have a fondness for Data. Although there are so many good characters on the Next Generation, it's hard to just pick one, which is also a cop-out. But let me ask you the flip side of that question. Who's your least favorite character on the Next Generation?
Boy, that's a tough one. They're all so good, but I mean, I'm probably going to say something that that will offend someone, but I was never a huge fan of Guinan. So, I don't know why. Just the idea that all of a sudden Starfleet needed a bar where everybody could hang out. I mean, I understand why they had it, you know, narratively for the show and everything. It made sense. But I just felt like that was like a huge stunt casting thing. Whoopi Goldberg, you know, wants to play a role. And they kind of, I don't know. I didn't love the character that much. I guess if I have to pick a least favorite, that would be it.
Well, that's fair. And there are a lot of weird, I wouldn't say weird, right? The Enterprise is not a warship. It's a ship of exploration. So you have to have these ancillary support crew, I guess. Well, I don't know if you have to, but they have the bartender. They have a barber. Right. You would think maybe they could in the future automate barbery. I don't know.
You would think so. And probably they have the replicators. So you'd think they could just order drinks and not have to have a bartender. So.
And I guess they did. They were whenever Guinan, maybe not whenever, but they often, there were many shots of Guinan like concocting drinks. And you would wonder why she'd bother to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I guess that, but it all has to be Synthahol, right? And that would, now we're getting super Star Trek nerdy. But exactly. So what is she doing? How, what's happening? I don't understand.
Well, that's the other thing. Why have a bar when no one can get drunk? I mean, I'm sorry, but I understand. Again, I know why narratively they had the thing, because everyone could get together and have conversations. It's like, we need a place other than the holodeck where people can gather, you know? And everything can't take place on the bridge, so we have to have another room where people can sit around. So,
it's anyway. True. And it's a kind of, it's a cool set, 10 forward, but when you think about it, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
It doesn't.
Although you could say it's kind of a commissary. So, you know, Voyager, they had the commissary area, which wasn't a bar. It was clearly where the crew had their dinner and, you know, their meals and things. I guess they didn't have a bar on Voyager. Yeah, that's interesting. I guess Enterprise is the only one that had a bar. I hadn't even thought of that.
Well, I guess it's probably the big – well, I guess you could say that DS9 had a bar, right? They had the –
that's
the,
true.
They had Quark's place, so that's – yeah, and I will admit that I know we're going to talk about a DS9 episode on this show, but I will say that DS9 was not my favorite Star Trek show.
So. Oh, anyway, that's a controversial opinion.
I know.
We must plumb the depths of this. So what about and for people listening, you already know what episode we're going to talk about, but I'm going to tell you right now, Wrongs Darker Than Death or Night, which is a season 6 episode, episode 17 for those people keeping track at home. So Chris, I will tell you this. Deep Space Nine is my favorite Star Trek series. Uh-oh. I am open to all opinions, and I understand, but I'm interested why you did not like it.
Well, I'm not saying I don't like it. I think what happened for me was I was such a fan of Next Generation that's what I always thought Star Trek was, a bunch of guys and girls in a ship, and they were off exploring and everything. I don't know that Deep Space Nine was my kind of show when it first came out. Subsequently, I've watched it and I've liked it a lot more, but I don't know that I was, you know, emotionally or whatever you want to call it, capable of appreciating the show as much as I do now. I've certainly come around to it more lately, but when it first came out, I was very much, I don't know, I was like, well, this doesn't seem like Star Trek to me. So that's kind of what it is. And I'm not saying I don't like it. I think my least favorite is probably Enterprise, but.
Oh, well. That
is the correct answer. But so I actually want, now that we've watched this episode for this show, I kind of want to go back and revisit the entire series again. So I think I'm going to do that.
And I can totally understand where you're coming from with that, because as I was watching this episode, I thought to myself, I can't think of another Star Trek series that would place an entire episode around basically one of the main characters' mothers being a sex slave. And that's basically what this episode is, right? Spoiler alert.
Yeah, basically.
Comfort
woman.
Comfort woman. There you go. That's what they say in the show. Yeah. That's a nicer way of saying sex slave. Yeah. And clearly Deep Space Nine has a darker spin on things than TNG, certainly. And that's a kind of, and I feel like this episode is really good example of a Deep Space Nine episode, because it is darker, obviously, but it also has a lot of layers and a lot of stuff is going on, and really strong character interactions. And I must say, I'm also biased, because Kira is one of my favorite Star Trek characters of all time, you know, not even just in Deep Space Nine, but just in general, because I think she's such a great character. And she's kind of the focal of this. She is not kind of, she is the focus of this episode. Although I question what she's doing in it, but basically, well, why don't we just hop into this episode now? We'll hop in.
Hop in, okay.
We're just gonna hop in. Cool. We're gonna open up the orb of Deep Space Nine and hope that the prophets allow us to talk about this episode.
Let's hope.
Let's hope, because otherwise it's gonna be a lot of dead air.
It could be a short episode if they don't let us go.
That's true. So my main question about this episode, really. Usually I jump into, you know, the whole plot synopsis, but the crux of this episode, from kind of a sci-fi nerd aspect, right, is the time travel. So she finds out something about her mom, and she has to travel back. Well, she doesn't have to, but she chooses to travel back in time to figure out if it's actually true or not.
Right.
And my question to you, Chris, is do you think – so there's this thing called the Temporal Prime Directive for Starfleet officers. She's not a Starfleet officer, so she can do whatever she wants. She goes back in time, and she isn't just an observer, although she says she's going to be an observer, although almost immediately she starts to change the timeline.
Yeah, Sisko's like, are you sure you want to go back? You might change the timeline. I was like, no, I'm just going to watch. And then, everything has changed, basically.
So. Yeah, the first thing she does is she beats up a guy who's trying to shake down her younger self and her parents for some soup. And I think to myself, but now she's changing the timeline. And now Gul Dukat has met her and seen her. And they play it off as though, I mean, she comes back and nothing has changed. So I can only assume that the prophets made sure that nothing, like the timeline was as it was before. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that was a question I had too watching the episode. Because again, I thought it was interesting that she wanted to go. I'm not sure why she even had to talk to Sisko at all, because she doesn't work for him. I mean, she does technically, but she's not, like you said, she's not in Starfleet. So I'm just going to go do what I want to do. Was she trying to seek his permission or trying to seek his blessing? I guess because he's the emissary. Maybe that was what it was. But yeah, and then she goes back in time and she clearly influences things. And yet, like you said, there's no repercussions at all through the rest of the show, which I never really understood that about this episode. It didn't make any sense. There should have been, especially with the attempted assassination too. I mean,
yeah. And I mean, this is Deep Space Nine is so good at, it was the first real Star Trek show that things in one episode would have repercussions in other episodes. Certainly TNG had two-parters, but generally they were all kind of contained in themselves, and the actions that happened in one episode, everybody was pretty much reset for the next episode, except for maybe when Tasha Yar dies. Spoiler for a super old show, Tasha Yar dies.
Yes, yeah.
Although she comes back.
And Data's very upset about it.
Yes, he is. But then he never speaks of her again.
Except don't they ask? They ask him a question in one of the movies. They're talking about, oh, it's see, I told you this was going to happen. With the Borg Queen, that movie.
First Contact.
Yeah, she asked him how long it's been since he's had sex. And he's like, it's been 7 years, blah, blah, blah. It's the last time he had sex with Tasha Yar, right? Mm-hmm. So
that's right. That's
sorry, I digressed to the movies. I know that's not what we're talking about.
No, that's fine. And I guess he does. There's also, I have a strong memory of maybe in Measure of a Man, where he's on trial about whether or not he's actually sentient or not. He has a little hollow projection of Tasha Yar. So she comes up there in a little hollow projection.
That's right. Yeah, it's like her photograph, exactly. Yeah.
Yes, and she's kind of like, you know, awkward and things. So my point is, I forgot we got onto Tasha Yar, and sorry. I completely forgot. No, I brought her up. So my point is, you would think, and certainly there are two ways to handle this, right? You either at the end, you just have a throwaway line that says, oh, the prophets just kind of reset the timeline, nothing's wrong. Or you could mine this episode for, you know, make subtle changes and then people have to go back in time and fix what she did, all that kind of thing. But at the end, they're just like, eh, whatever.
Well, maybe there was an intention to do that. Or maybe there are subtle changes, but we wouldn't have known. Or, I mean, who knows? I mean, the writers, I'm sure, have their motivations for having this whole episode. And from what I understand, some of it was, you know, how do we explore this whole relationship between Kira and Gul Dukat, you know, because they end up working together a little bit. And even though he's one of the chief architects of her people being, you know, destroyed and killed and whatever, but they end up throwing them together a lot as the show goes along. And I guess it was interesting for them to explore the relationship between these two. Now that she knows that he really was using her mom as a sex slave. So that's a weird dynamic to throw in there, but okay.
And now we pause for a message from our sponsor. This week, we are sponsored by the Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy Experience, which is happening at the Intrepid Museum in New York City. And this is the first venue in the United States that is hosting this experience. And if you're a Star Trek fan, and if you're listening to this podcast, I got to assume you're either one of two things, a Star Trek fan or a Scott McNulty fan. If you're a Scott McNulty fan, I think you'll enjoy the Star Trek, the Starfleet Academy experience as well, although you'll find less fun facts about me. If you're a Star Trek fan, though, you're really going to love this thing. It's a 12,000 square foot interactive journey featuring all kinds of crazy technology, leap motion, projection mapping, holograms, all kinds of stuff. And what you do here is you're a cadet, right? And the idea is you are in Starfleet. You enter your orientation, and then there are 9 zones that you go through. You know, there's engineering, command, which is gold. I'm a command officer. Science, all kinds of Star Trek stuff. You learn, you test your knowledge, put your skills to the test. It's a lot of fun. Once you complete your training, then you're commissioned in Starfleet. And as an added bonus, which is awesome, the original Galileo shuttlecraft from the original series is on display. So you can see that in person, see a real piece of Star Trek history. You could touch it. although you're probably not supposed to, so maybe keep your hands to yourself. But when do you get an opportunity to see the shuttlecraft Galileo? Plus, all summer, the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum is putting on Star Trek-themed events with movie nights on the flight deck, astronomy nights with a Star Trek twist, all kinds of stuff. If you don't know where the Intrepid Museum is, it's in New York City, Pier 86, West 46th Street, and 12th Avenue. So I know by now that you're excited about going to visit this. I'm certainly going to go as soon as I can. It's open for a limited time only, though, July 9th through October 31st of 2016. So head to intrepidmuseum.org/StarTrek for more information about the Starfleet Academy experience and to get tickets. You know what you should do? Boldly go. It is a weird... their relationship is very strange in general. But this just complicates things, which is one of the reasons I like Deep Space Nine, is they're not afraid to have very complicated relationships with things. And this episode speaks to that on many levels because, you know, it's basically about... And I think this is something we've all experienced, not so much that someone we know has had one of our parents as sex slaves, but rather that we find out much later on in life that something our parents told us wasn't actually the whole truth, and they were just trying to tell us, they told us what they told us to save us the hurt and any kind of pain that might be associated with the actual truth. So they're trying to shield us from it, right? And that's what Kira's parents are doing here, well, certainly her father. And then it's a whole complicated thing about, you know, Kira's very upset with her mother, but her mother was really just trying to help her, and it's a very complicated feelings, I think, that come up in this episode.
And they do, and it's interesting because that's one of the things she says in the opening to Jadzia about, oh, my father always said that she was the bravest woman he ever knew, which now in this context is kind of true. But what was weird to me is when they first go to become comfort women, she doesn't seem that upset about it. I don't know. I mean, she's like, okay, sure, let's go, whatever. I'm kind of hungry. So, and then they take her into the room, eat as much as you want. She's like, oh, all this food's amazing. And then, like, again, these are the people that are putting your people in prison camps and killing all of us. Yet, you know, it seemed a little blasé to me. Or maybe she was just in shock. I don't know. But she didn't seem to be nearly as upset about it as Kira was, for sure.
Yeah, and I found that strange as well, because they had just ripped her from her family, and we had that very sad scene where, you know, the kid's crying and her husband's crying, and Kira gets swept up, and they take her mom up to Deep Space Nine, or Tarok Nor at that point. And yeah, she doesn't seem, even before they get into the room with all the food, she doesn't seem too upset about the whole situation. But I guess one could argue that maybe in the back of her head, she kind of knew how Cardassians act. And she was trying to scheme a way to get her, you know, better treatment for her family by, you know, doing whatever Gul Dukat wanted.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, because I guess this probably isn't the first time they've come through looking for women to take to the ship or to the station for the Cardassians. I said Cardassians, didn't I? Cardassians. Thank you.
It's a sign of our time.
It is a sign of our times. Unfortunately, it's too bad, but it is. So you're right. That's actually a good point. I didn't think of that, I guess, is that this is not the first time this has happened. So she was maybe prepared for it even to happen at some point. And maybe that's her master plan all along. But I think the thing that tips it for her, though, is, well, two things maybe. Gul Dukat is such a charismatic guy. I mean, in some ways, he kind of is.
Oh, he is.
And
totally.
Then also he's like, I will heal your scar, you know, which is bring me the treatment, the thing, you know, and I will fix you. And she's like, oh, no one's ever done that before, you know, so. My husband can't do that.
That's true. My stupid husband doesn't have a dermal regenerator.
Jerk.
Yeah. All he has is our three kids. See, that's all about fatherhood, too. Look, yeah. I guess this is really more about motherhood, but still fatherhood a little bit, because her father, Kira's father, tells her the story about how her mother died, doing whatever he told her. I forget even what his story was, but
she died in the labor camp, right?
She died in the labor camp, yeah. Doing something. I don't remember what, but not what she was actually doing.
No, but then I guess you don't tell a child that story either. Your mom's kind of I don't want to use the word whore, but kind of the same.
Technically, I suppose.
Technically.
She's not getting
very
paid.
Very brave, very brave. Yeah, she's not paid. Well, she's paid in food.
Oh, well, that's true.
And medical supplies, I'm just saying.
They release her family from captivity, so as we find out. This is an interesting episode. Let's talk about Gul Dukat, because whatever Gul Dukat is in an episode, I want to talk about Gul Dukat because Gul Dukat is awesome. But I'm conflicted because Gul Dukat is also totally evil. So it is if he's so charming, and you kind of want to root for him, but then you realize he's doing all these awful things.
He is doing awful things. You're right. But I think that's part of the people just like to root for the bad guys sometimes for whatever reason, because they're sometimes more allowed to be more interesting. Because if you think, I mean, in Star Trek context, at least, a lot of the heroes couldn't really be, I'm not saying like three-dimensional, but they couldn't be quite as dimensional as someone like Gul Dukat, who can be evil but also do good. And it's nice to see them try to redeem him at some point, or maybe humanize him a little bit more. I think this is an episode where they were trying to humanize him a little bit. I mean, even though I'm not really sure of the sort of reason for his original call to her to say, by the way, you know, I used to bang your mom. No big. I'm just trying to come clean here.
He's in some kind of 12-step program.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, honesty and admitting your faults is one of the steps he's on. So he's just calling up everybody and letting them know.
I guess so. But it didn't make any sense in a way. But it does make sense if they're trying to make it so. Well, I guess they probably have the arc of the whole, you know, series in their minds. And at some point they know that Kira and Gul Dukat have to work together. So I don't know. I always got the impression that Gul Dukat was sort of sweet on Kira in the first place, too. So
yeah, you always get that. There's that certain tension. Certainly, it is not. It's an unrequited interest, because Kira is clearly disgusted by Gul Dukat in general. Yeah. Yeah. She makes no qualms about not liking Cardassians, and she has some pretty good reasons. You know, millions of Bajorans killed, sex slaves, on and on. The Cardassians, not so nice. But this episode is interesting because, it starts with Gul Dukat calling her up and saying, hey, I know it's your mom's birthday, so I'm calling you. Oh, I see you had the flower she liked. I knew your mom. She loved me. Talk to you later. And Kira's like,
peace,
what?
Peace out.
Peace out. No, that's all. Yeah, that's Dukat it. Out.
Exactly.
And then Kira, of course, is like, that's totally not true. My father told me that she died in the labor camp. And he's like, well, check the records. I got to go. And he knew, and so he knew that her favorite flower was at whatever this Bajoran lilac. I don't think they were saying lilac.
Bajoran lilac. Yeah, I think so.
Kira was to, the episode starts with, you know, Worf and Dax for some reason talking about having a party, which we never go back to. So it's kind of weird, but then we see Kira and Dax talking because Kira has these flowers and we find out, oh, it's her mom's birthday, but she never knew her mom, blah, blah, blah. But she liked these particular kind of flowers, and Gul Dukat knew that. So then Kira takes the leap that, oh, maybe what he's telling me is true, because he knew that she likes these flowers. Which, right. You know, could be just a guess. Turns out it wasn't. But that's basically when she talks to Sisko and says, oh, Dukat called me. He said that, you know, he had my mom as a sex slave, although he didn't say that exactly. and he knew she liked these flowers, so I have to go back in time. You're cool with that, right?
He's like, let me get this straight.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to go back in time and find out if Gul Dukat was your mom's lover. Okay. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, he does that old, what you said was so ridiculous, I have to repeat it back to you to make sure exactly. I've heard what you said.
Exactly.
He is not a big fan of this plan. Although, you know, and this is another interesting thing about Deep Space Nine, right? Is because, and you mentioned this earlier, Sisko has these dual roles. He's a Starfleet officer, but he's also the emissary of the prophets, so he has all these kind of religious trappings about him. And so Kira isn't asking him as her commander. She's asking him as the emissary to get her access to the time orb that can apparently let anybody who the prophets decide is okay to travel back in time. And my wife was kind of half-watching this episode with me. And she said, how come it's so easy for them to travel back in time? Wouldn't that cause a lot of trouble? And I was like, yes. Yes,
you would think it would. It's a very convenient plot device, though, if you need it.
It makes things so much easier.
I would have thought that it would be more of a device where she could go back in time and just observe, and that's it. Like,
right.
Not interact with the surrounding, you know, the people and everything. Because, yeah, there's a danger that you could change a lot of things. Because I feel like, what if she succeeded in killing Gul Dukat? Then this whole, it's like the, you know, the paradox. So she goes back in time and she kills him and her mom, and then this wouldn't have happened, so there'd be no reason for her to go back in time, right? So it's like, what do we do? It's crazy. So it's like, you know, the Terminator kind of thing, too. So anyway.
That's right. That she comes back as a robot.
Right, exactly. Totally, yeah. That could totally happen.
And that's my here's my my spoiler alert about my opinion of this episode. I think it's a good episode. I just think that the time travel is mishandled because exactly what you said, Chris, is she the first thing she does. Sisko basically says, "Hey, go back. Don't do anything to change the timeline." And she's like, "Of course, I'm not an idiot. I would not change the timeline.
It would be ridiculous." Of course I won't.
And then she goes back. She ends up in the slave camp or mine that her family was in. There's a really nice scene where she meets her family, and she knows who they are, but they don't know who she is, and she meets herself. And then, you know, her 3-year-old self whispers to her mom and wants to know what her name is, and so she makes up a name. I thought that was all really nice. But then, you know, and I've already mentioned this, these guys come by and say, "Hey, give us your soup." And they're like, "No, we waited online for this soup. Get your own soup." And they're like, "We want your soup." There's a lot of talk of soup.
There's a lot of soup, yeah.
The problem is there isn't that much soup, so everybody wants the soup. And so Kira's like, get lost. Because, you know, we're all Bajorans, the enemy's the Cardassians, we shouldn't be fighting with each other. And he's like, "I'm hungry, get out of my way, give me the soup." Right. And then Kira beats him up.
Right.
And then, you know, so that immediately she's there for maybe 2 minutes, and already she's beating up people and causing a ruckus.
Right, because you have to figure that if she hadn't been there, then they would have taken the soup, probably, because I don't think her dad was going to stand up to these two guys who had a knife. And so the soup would have been taken, but I don't know if that would have changed anything necessarily, because the Kardashians would still – I said Kardashians again. Kardashians would have come by and still taken that's mom true. Away to be a comfort woman. So that's not the part that disturbed me the most, because you can sort of see how that could get passed over. But the whole, "I'm going to blow up Gul Dukat."
She does plant a bomb later on.
Yeah, it's like, that seems like kind of a big deal.
And even though it doesn't work, right? It's a failed attempt to blow up Gul Dukat, because she, and Gul Dukat is a complicated character. So, you know, he did what he said he would do. And then that changes Kira's mind a little bit. And she understands, oh, my mom is doing this to help the family, whatever. You would think that he would remember, oh, right, you look exactly like that woman who saved me and my Bajoran lover from that bomb that one time, the next time he sees Kira.
Yeah, you'd think they would jog a little memory in his mind, because it wasn't that long ago, right?
No, and she didn't, like, try to change her appearance in any way. She looks right. Exactly like she looks, which seems weird to me also, but hey, you think she'd wear a hat or something? I don't know.
Fake mustache, maybe.
Exactly.
I don't know.
What are those Groucho Marx glasses at the nose and the mustache? They wouldn't know. And we have one more sponsor this week. It's Casper. Now, people who know me know that Casper is my favorite internet mattress. It's a sleep brand that created one perfect mattress, and they sell it directly to customers, eliminating the commission-driven inflated prices that you find at those mattress warehouses. And the award-winning sleep surface was developed in-house. It's a sleek design, and it's delivered in a tiny how-did-they-do-that-sized box. You dial it up on the internet, you place your order, you get this box. You think, there can't be a mattress in that box, but believe me, brother, there's a mattress in there. And now, in addition to mattresses, they also offer an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. Now, this Casper mattress is obsessively engineered. They've got mattress engineers there who are dedicated to getting the finest mattress at a shockingly fair price. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleeping surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. In fact, Time magazine named it one of the best inventions of 2015, and it's the most awarded mattress of the decade, getting all of the awards for mattresses that a mattress can get. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Scott, this sounds great, but it must cost an arm and a leg to get it shipped to me. Nope. It's free shipping and returns in the U.S. and Canada, and you can even try Casper for 100 nights risk-free in your own home, because really, that's how you know if you're going to like a mattress. You have to sleep on it. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. Well, run-of-the-mill mattresses can cost well over $1,500, but Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin-size mattress, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. It is a deal. Speaking of deals, You get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/trek and using the offer code TREK. Terms and conditions apply. Yeah, so she tries to kill them and then she doesn't. But so that still happens. But then I guess you could explain that away with, well, people were trying to kill Goldcut all the time. So,
well, that's true. Wasn't there something like 7 assassination attempts on him or something anyway? That's what they're, I was reading in some notes from when I was making notes for this episode. Mm-hmm. But my other question is, okay, so maybe he can forget that someone tried to kill him and the woman who saved him looked a lot like Kira, but then Kira disappears.
That's true.
They look over and they go, where's that woman who was just here a second ago? What is happening right
She's
now?
She's gone. And she was right. And it's not like she was on Bajor, so they could say, oh, maybe she escaped the mines and she went, she was on Deep Space Nine. And so there's no way for her to get off of it. Right. But she just disappears because her vision quest, which wasn't really a vision quest because she actually went back in time. If it were a vision quest, it would make more sense, ends.
Although that begs the question of, if she could do that, then why couldn't she just go back in time and you know, kill a lot of Cardassians and save her people? I mean, I guess there's a whole, maybe you can only go back in time and do good. I don't know. But
I think so. They have, their out for that is that she does say, if the prophets allow me to go back in time. So one imagines if she were going to go back in time and radically change things, the prophets would stop her because all the things that had to happen happened to lead up to whatever the prophets need. So the Bajoran occupation, or the, I guess it's the Cardassian occupation, had to happen so they wouldn't let her stop it.
Right. No, I guess that makes sense.
I'm assuming. I don't know.
Time much sense as anything else. You're right.
Exactly. Time travel is a difficult thing. It's always interesting. I like it a lot, but it always raises these wacky questions.
It does. But you're right. I agree with you that it's sort of handled. They kind of gloss over. I feel like there was more to this episode. Maybe that was written, but they had to cut it for time or whatever. Because I'm sure they write the episodes longer than they think they're going to be. So there's probably more explanation or more of this. I also felt, and this, I'm just going to talk about the technology. Okay, I can't even talk now. The aspects of the episode. I thought some of the editing was kind of choppy, and some of the sort of photography was kind of, I mean, the episode sort of felt a little jumbled in a way, although maybe it was supposed to. I don't know. And I don't remember if all the episodes were kind of like that or if this was just a particular one, but it felt sort of, I don't know. That's what I mean when I say something, I felt like something was missing. Maybe it was another scene that we didn't get or some more explanation or something. Anyway, but it just felt weird.
Are there any particular moments that you can think of where the editing seemed choppy or weird to you?
Well, the part when she runs in and says, okay, there's a bomb, and no one, Dukat, get out of here, and they go out into the hallway, and then she's, you know, the bomb goes off and they're on the ground and they all look, I almost felt like they suddenly didn't remember that she was there. And that's not exactly what I mean by the editing, but that was also just when I was thinking about the scene again.
Right.
It sort of felt like they looked at each other, but they kind of didn't, like, almost they didn't remember that it happened. So I wonder if you go back in time and the prophets allow you to see these things or whatever, when you leave, is your presence sort of erased somehow, maybe?
Well, I guess the prophets can do many things. So
yeah, I guess.
Maybe they just fix it after. And once you've learned your lesson or whatever reason they've sent you back in time, one assumes that they only send people back in time to learn a very particular thing because that's how the prophets are. So once you learn that thing, like, you know, the importance of family and your mother's sacrifice and all that stuff that I suppose Kira learns at the end of this, they fix it so that, you know, whatever you may have done, stepping on that butterfly has no effect.
Right, exactly. Do you think she learns a lesson, though? I was kind of wondering because her rationale for letting him live and letting her live was like, well, you know, I know she was a collaborator, but she was my mom. It's like, that seems to be the reason she's giving, that it's just, well, she's my mom, I can't kill my mom. But then why would she save Dukat? She could have just saved her mom, too.
Yeah, I don't know why she saved Dukat, because he was off in... So, you know, through the course of the episode, she gets this bomb and she plants it in Dukat's quarters and she's going to kill her mother and Dukat. And her mother's sitting at this desk, right? And Dukat says, oh, you should look at this data file. You might find it interesting. I'm going to go hang out in my little office or den or whatever he goes. So he goes off there and she, Kira's mom, plugs in this little, you know, USB drive. The one thing I did find funny, and I always forget that this is the case, is the screens in Deep Space Nine are so tiny. They have giant desks and tiny little screens. That just amuses me. From, you know, Star Trek's very good at predicting technology, but they get huge things wrong. So it's always amusing. And one of my favorite aspects of that also is that in the original series, so many things they get right, but nobody ever thought about networking. So they always had to move things around on little data disks. But that's my own pet, my own hobby horse. So she's looking at this thing and turns out, oh, it's a message from her father to her mother saying, hey, I hope, you know, I still love you. Well, I know I still love you. I appreciate all that you're doing. They let us out a couple weeks ago. We're back home. The kids are thriving. I understand that you're doing this for us. And I hope that you're the bravest person I've known. And I hope, you know, you keep up a stiff upper lip and all that good stuff.
Because we're really liking this extra food and everything. Right. I found a new girlfriend, so we're cool. You know?
I love the food and the medical supplies.
He seems to get over it awfully quick, too. That's the thing that I also found strange. There's a lot of these emotional sort of things that happen, yet people seem to accept them so much. And maybe that's just because they've been oppressed for so long, or they're just used to making these things, or they realize there's no other choice. Maybe they're good and adaptable. But yeah, and he's like, yeah, okay, you know what? You're doing what you got to do. I'm cool. No problem. You know, it just seemed weird to me. But the other thing I was wondered about, like you mentioned the screens, but I always sort of pictured when he's making this, you know, it's like, oh, we're awesome and everything's fine, that they pull back just a little bit and there's like a, you know, a rifle right above his head. Everything is fine here. We're fine, you know? So I kind of felt that was a fake message. I don't know why, but.
Well, I know why, because Gold, in this episode, Gold Dukat appears to be nice, right? So he does the dermal regeneration. So Kira's mom has the scar she's self-conscious about, so she always wears her hair over it. Gold Dukat notices it, and the collaborator Bajoran that had collected these Bajoran women apologizes, and he says, I don't think I noticed that defect. I apologize, or something like that. And he was going to send her off, and Gold Dukat's like, no, we can fix her, and he fixes her. And then later in the evening, I guess all the comfort women are in, aka sex slaves, are in Quark's bar, which isn't Quark's bar at the time, hanging out with a bunch of Cardassian officers who are, you know, doing the things you would imagine Cardassian officers would do. And one of them takes a shine to Kira's mom, and he is, whispering, one imagines, not very nice things into her ear and kind of, manhandling her in the corner. And Gul Dukat comes by and saves her and says something about, please excuse the action. I hope one boorish action doesn't reflect poorly on all of us or something like that.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And then the other guy that's fondling Kira is like, yeah, watch, he's going to do this. Like, he does it all the time. So
exactly. And then he says exactly what Gul Dukat was going to say in like 2 seconds later. And so we figure out, oh, he sets this up so that every, you know, all the comfort women that catch his eye think that he's looking out for them, when in fact it's just an elaborate ruse, because Gul Dukat enjoys having that kind of power and playing these kinds of games.
He's a player, for sure.
He is a player. So I could totally see, and that would have been interesting, although it would have been hard, I guess, in that message if, you know, they couldn't pull back while she was watching it, but they could have cut to a scene with him then turning and saying, are you happy now? And then the Cardassian says,
they're holding weapons on the kids or something. Right, and he's like, exactly. Are you happy? Because I kind of felt like that's the way they were going to go. And maybe they really did go that way. And this was all a ruse. Maybe it was Dukat's sort of thing at the beginning, but then he was with her for 7 years.
Right.
So maybe he did actually fall in love with her at some point. And maybe, again, I think this episode was in a lot of ways an attempt to humanize him a little bit and give him more dimension and not just a ruthless killer. And maybe the fact that he ended up with her and was willing to, help her family and stuff was, sort of made that happen. But he still was an evil man at the end, or an evil person.
He was an evil. And the other thing that kind of undercuts all of this is, right, all of the nice, quote unquote, nice things that he does for her family and for her are like meaningless to him, right? Because it's just extra food. It doesn't make any difference to him. They're starving the people anyway, so he can give people a little bit more food, or letting her family, if he does, out of working in the mine, it's no skin off his back, right? Because there are lots of other Bajorans. So he is the power dynamic is all screwed up, right? Because he has all of the power. And these tiny little things that he's giving to people seem like great treasures, right? Because they have nothing. And even just having a little bit is good. And that's why I kind of the quick kind of getting over emotional things in this episode kind of rang true for me, because these Bajorans are kind of, given up. They are oppressed. they are just, this is what's happening. We have to, you know, hold on to any good thing that we can get. If I can help my family, great. If I can't, well, they're no worse off than they were before.
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess they're defeated people, basically. So they're completely oppressed, and they've given up all hope. So even a tiny bit of kindness goes a long way, which actually makes perfect sense, because it overcomes her obvious distaste for the people that have destroyed her people. She's like, oh, this is actually pretty cool after all, you know. Mm-hmm. And it makes it easier to understand why she would go with, I'm talking about Kira's mom now, why she would go with it. But then Kira has the benefit of hindsight, I guess, or foresight, depending on the timeline. But she knows it's all, you know, BS. And she's like, these guys are evil, and I will never, you know, collaborate as a collaborator as a collaborator. And I will hate the Cardassians for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so interesting to see Kira, who is this strong kind of revolutionary. And when she was in her, you know, her past, she was in the underground and, you know, blowing up stuff and basically a terrorist, but a good terrorist. And so she was fighting the oppressors, and she can't really understand why all the people that she's meeting are just kind of caving in and they aren't fighting back. And then almost immediately when she, you know, she gets kicked out of being a comfort lady because she beats up a bunch of people, which, you know, is probably on the list of things comfort women are supposed to do, beat up people, not high on the list. Unless it's requested, I guess.
But right, exactly.
That's a different podcast. So she's sent off to like the dilithium mine on Terok-Nor, the mining section. And then she immediately kind of hooks up with the underground cell. And that's where we get this whole, you know, she gets a bomb and she comes back and says, you know, I'm really sorry about beating up people. Let me come back and as a comfort lady. And they're like, okay, your mom really likes you, although she doesn't know that she's your mom. But she likes you, so
she took an instant liking to you, and she has Gul Dukat wrapped around her finger. And but now that you said what you said about him and the Cardassians, it makes perfect sense now that these things are able to move so quickly because he doesn't care, and that's really interesting about him too. And I think in his mind, though, in some ways, he doesn't understand why people don't like him more.
Exactly. That's,
look at all these nice things that I do for you, and I don't understand why the people are trying to kill me or blow, you know, or not. They're not, you know, responding like I thought they would. He's delusional in a lot of ways, I think.
Yeah, I think that sums up. That is the key aspect of Gul Dukat's character. He thinks that he is saving the Bajoran people, and whatever he does, he's doing it for them. He doesn't understand why they don't want to work in these death camps. He doesn't understand why they are upset when he takes their women and gives them a better environment from the one that he's imposed on them already.
Exactly.
And, you know, so Gul Dukat thinks he is the hero in every episode that he is in, which makes – and the problem or I guess the problem really for the Star Trek writers is that the actor that they got to play Gul Dukat is just so charming that, you know, you find it hard not to be like, well, I kind of, you know, this Gul Dukat's not so bad. And then you realize, wait a second, he is totally insane and he is pretty bad.
Well, that's actually why he's such a great character. I think you're hitting it on the head there. He's just, the actor is so interesting and so engaging that it's sometimes easy to, you can sort of forget that he's so evil, and that's what makes him more complex. Because if he's just evil, then he's just kind of one note and boring. But the fact that he can do all this stuff and play it so like, I'm, you know, I'm a magnanimous dictator and I do nice things and I'm, you know, this and that. And that's what makes him. And you were asking about some of my favorite characters. After I watched this episode, I realized how much I liked him when I had watched this series originally. I think he's a fascinating character. And his sort of interplay with Kira and then with Sisko too, where they become like these bitter adversaries. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a really great dynamic to watch and develop. And how they end up at the end, you know, when the series ends is pretty, I won't spoil it for people, but it's a cool ending. So.
Yes. And I think the best dynamic between, you know, Kira and Sisko and Gul Dukat is that they both, Kira and Sisko, are like, you are a psychopath. You are delusional. And he is totally rejecting that. And he's like, no, I am trying to be your friend. I'm trying to help you. You don't understand. You're just give me a chance. And the genius of, you know, the writers and the acting is that every time they do give him a tiny chance, it turns out, no, he is in fact a psychopath and he just wants to kill people. But he is so charming that you think, well, maybe this time he won't.
He'll get one more chance not to kill people.
That's right.
What, I mean, doesn't he try to kill his own kids at one point?
He does.
Yeah, it's like, this is embarrassing. I can't have this child here. They must die. So,
His half Bajoran, half Cardassian,
right,
exactly, child. Yeah. So he had a thing for the Bajoran women, I think. So yeah, this episode is very interesting. And if you get over the kind of the quibbles with time travel, I feel like there's a lot here, because Kira is trying to figure out, you know, she learns a lot about her family. And she, I don't know if you make a good point, Chris. I don't know if she really learns that, you know, sometimes people have to make difficult decisions and that, you know, they were trying to do the best that they could, because she still says, you know, at the end, she's like, a collaborator is a collaborator. And Sisko's like, well, don't you think? She didn't want to be a collaborator, but she kind of like, it was the best, it was the least worst choice that she had. And Kira's like, no. And then he's like, well, why did you save her? And that's when she says, because she's my mother. So I'm not sure if at the end of this, if Kira has learned anything other than the truth, although one would say perhaps she would be better off just believing what her father had said in the first place.
Yeah, she shouldn't have gone back in time in the first place. And that's a takeaway from this episode and any other time travel episode, is never go back in time. It never works out.
It always complicates things.
Unless you're trying to stop the Borg from destroying the Earth. That's a totally different episode, or a totally different movie. But yeah,
that's true. Or if you want to go back in time to the Trouble with Tribbles episode to make sure that Captain Kirk isn't destroyed by the Klingon bomb, then we can do that one. Okay, that's all right as well. But every other instance of time travel doesn't work out well.
Too many paradoxes.
So, oh, well, then I guess it's also in Star Trek IV that go back in time to get the whales. So that's okay, too.
That's right. Saving the whales is okay. Yeah. All right. So there's a few times when it's okay.
That's right. There are a few exceptions. Time travel is very complicated, is what we're trying to say. If you learn one thing from this podcast.
Well, the one thing I always loved about Star Trek is like, oh, is Kirk's like in that movie. He's like, okay, Scotty, start your computations for time warp. It's like, okay, we'll just go back in time. Easy. No problem.
Exactly. Everybody knows how to do it. It's just they choose not to do it because they have the temporal prime directive.
Right. And they had to, the fact that they had to start a temporal prime directive in the first place should tell you that there's a problem with time travel.
That's true. And that one of my favorite Deep Space Nine episodes is when they travel back to the Trouble with Tribbles. And in that episode, they have this whole Section 31, I think, maybe, that deals with temporal problems. And they show up in Sisko's office and they're like, you know, tell us why you did this. And he says, well, Captain Kirk. And they're like, oh, Captain Kirk, we have like a giant file on Captain Kirk.
That guy's always been a problem.
That's right. And it's just a great little, you know, nod to Star Trek fans. Because Captain Kirk, troublesome. And he liked to travel back in time a lot.
He liked to go his own way. And he, you know, he fell in love with a lot of robots and women. And
it's true. Back in time and in the present, Captain Kirk. So what did you think of this episode, Chris? I liked it. If you know, disengage that part of the nerd brain that's trying to figure out the time travel aspect. But what did you think of it?
I liked it too. I hadn't seen Deep Space Nine in a while, and so this was an interesting episode to get back into it. And it definitely made me interested in going back and revisiting the entire show. I remembered how much I liked these characters, which is good. So, but yeah, you're right. If you sort of forget about some of the sort of logic, time travel things, it was a good episode. I just wanted to mention, I don't know that Kira learns anything at the end, but maybe she learns something more about herself. It's like maybe she realizes that. Maybe, you know, decisions are important and there are different, but there are gray areas, I think. And that's maybe why it helps her be able to work with Dukat more down the road, because not everything is black and white.
Right. She is very much like, you were either helping the Cardassians or you were helping the Bajorans. And there's no overlap.
With us or against us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, Chris, thank you for being with me on this episode. See what I did there?
I did. That was good. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Next on Random Trek, DS9. Season 4, Episode 17, A Session.